Hey, it's Brian. If you've ever thought about a career in sports, you need to check out the Master's in Sports Administration program at Northwestern University. You'll learn essential skills from experienced faculty with connections to college, professional, and amateur athletics. You can choose a specialization in sports analytics and get in on a growing field. Earn your Northwestern Master's degree online or in convenient evening classes. It's great. You can get a Northwestern degree, which is incredibly impressive, online from anywhere in the world. You don't have to be in the Chicago area. Find out more today at sps.northwestern.edu/sports. One more time, sps.northwestern.edu/sports. And the Work in Sports podcast is brought to you by the Work in Sports Academy, our suite of four online courses designed to get you hired in sports. Let's say you're about to enter your job search. Well, our online course on interviewing would be great for you. If you need help refining your resume, cover letter, and personal brand, yeah, we got a course for that too. Maybe you're frustrated that you don't know anyone in the industry and your connections are limited. Well, we have a course on networking, how to build and maintain industry relationships. We have our courses cover all the main tools the sports job seeker needs: experience, networking, resume, cover letter, social media branding, interviewing skills. We got it all. And you can bundle them all four, into one super discounted price. Check out our Work in Sports Academy courses at workinsports.com/academy. That's workinsports.com/academy. All right, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. It's that time of year, people. No, I'm not talking about the most wonderful time of the year. I don't know about you, but there is a rhythm to my work and life year, and December has a very specific role for me. There are certain things, events, or opportunities I try to focus on during different months or seasons. You know, there's certain things I have expectations for in spring or summer, or fall, winter. For me, January is, well, without sounding too cheesy or cliche, it's like a month of rebirth. It's like setting the stage for the new year and starting to accomplish the goals I have set for myself. But you can't start accomplishing goals if you don't set them. So for me, December is for planning and strategizing. Yes, it is also the month for overindulgence and lots of parties, but primarily it is a month I focus on planning and setting up my goals and trying to understand where I want to go in the next year, both in life and in work. Planning takes different forms for different people. You know, I'm building out our content strategy, developing new ideas, resources, and budgets, deciding if I want to hire an intern or two this year, and a whole bunch of other things. These are the kind of things I'm setting up for my stage of the year. But for you, planning for the coming year may take on a completely different format. In fact, I suggest that it should. Most of you should be focused on how to make yourself the best possible candidate for jobs in the sports industry in 2020. Period. And to start off this season of planning, I'm going to do you a real solid. In 2019, we had a bevy of incredible guests, but one rose above the rest when it came to planning for your sports career. Meilin Vu, Cleveland Indians Director of Talent Acquisition, opened up her world to us, sharing insight into what she expects on phone interviews, resume building, interview tips, hiring trends, mistakes people make that drive her crazy, and so much more. Meilin is on the front lines of hiring every day. Everybody that works at the Cleveland Indians comes through her. Every job requisition, every interested party starts with her. She's seen it. She's sharing it. She's telling you what you need to do. If you listened to this episode last January when it originally debuted, I don't care. Listen again. And if you're new to this episode, get out your pen and pencil. This is a master's level concept and episode, and you should be taking notes and building out your action plan for 2020. Here's my good friend, Meilin Vu. Hi, Meilin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Brian?
I am great. I'm so glad that I get to catch you in the Indians offseason, which I know you're not in season playing right now, but this is a busy time of year for you guys building your staff out for the coming year. I will tell you, We have in our audience a lot of people looking to work in the sports industry and are really into baseball, but we also have people who are really interested in the human resources and talent acquisition side that you're in. So let's start with that side. What led you to a career in talent acquisition, and why did you choose this path?
Yeah, I actually got my start in very black and white from the sports industry. I was working for an energy trading company, actually for their parent company. It was Strategic Consulting, and I was actually working as a marketing assistant. As I was working there and I was working with the chief marketing officer at the time, he was going after like Bank of America, KeyBank, Visa, and all that good stuff, and I had to learn a lot. He actually turned to me and said, you know, we're looking for somebody to handle our recruitment process of bringing in analysts and associates. How would you like to be able to do that role? And I didn't know anything about talent acquisition side other than getting to know the people who were in it before, learning a little bit about the process. But I actually was scared at first because it was a completely new role for me, something I never really tapped into too much of other than learning it from an academic standpoint. But he convinced me, saying that, you know, it's the same thing that you're doing from a marketing perspective, but now you're just marketing the people and then try to vet out the people. And so I took it. I took on that opportunity and never looked back since. I love the fact that I got to help students, got to help people find their passion, find their career. And then that's what kept me in the same type of role in different industries, and then it led me to the sports side.
What was it about the sports side? Was it just an opportunity that came up, or was it always something in the back of your mind like, oh, this would be really cool to take this to the sports world?
Yeah, I never had that, never had that thought of, oh, you know, I want to go into sports with talent acquisition. Never really did. I mean, I was born and raised in Cleveland. And so if you're a Clevelander, you definitely know your sports and you're a fan of any of the teams that you had. And I was definitely one of those folks. I always had an interest in Indian sports. I always had an interest in just taking a look at the game, regardless of what that score is really like, just wanted to have a good game. But never really understood the background or the inner workings from a business perspective or, you know, the operations perspective. This opportunity actually came about when I was actually working for another company as a consulting role, and I was doing a bit of work research, and this popped up on my screen, the opportunity to work for the Cleveland Indians. And, you know, my first initial thought was, if I apply, I'm probably going to be one of thousands of people that are going to apply for this role. And you know, how am I going to be able to rise to the stack? But, you know, I decided to put my name in the hat anyway, because you just never know where it's going to lead you. And I did. So I did the, you know, normal route of applying online. And about within 2 weeks, I would say 2 weeks, I got a call back to do a phone interview and to talk a little bit more about the role. And this is, I think, during the time when Mark Shapiro had just stepped over from our GM to our president of business ops and baseball ops.
Right.
And so he was looking to do some changes, and I was part of those changes. And so when I went through the in-person interviews, I learned a little bit more about the business model, learning a little bit more of what they're looking to do differently from other sports club. And I thought to myself, like, this is something different. This is something new, something that could be fun for me to learn a completely different industry of what I've been so used to. And so then I decided to take it. And since then, I've been here since. I haven't left. I love what I do. I love the industry. It's always ever changing. And it's a challenge each day.
You mentioned in there that the Indians look to do things differently than other clubs when it comes to your side of the industry and talent acquisition. How would you define that? What do you think the Indians do? I know you haven't worked for other organizations, but from what you hear chattered around the league, what do you think is different about the way the Indians go about it?
We are very active in the recruitment process from the business operations standpoint. So for myself, I usually go out there and build relationships with a lot of the different colleges, build relationship with associations and boards, just to learn what the market is really like out there. And we look at folks who, you know, don't have a sports background or has an interest in getting in sports but don't know how or didn't know they can go into sports. So we're looking for top talent in any kind of industry, whether it's consumer product goods, consulting companies, investment banking, or someone who even has a degree in biology. You know, they have a mind frame that you just never knew that they can go into sports. And so for us, what we want to do is just go out there and learn what that market is really like, who's the best and the brightest that's out there, who has the aptitude to be able to work for our organization and make an impact and make us better the day that they step foot in here. And it's my job to go out there and find those talent. And then as we bring them in here, evaluating and deciphering to see who really would work best in our culture, in our organization. I think a lot of the other organization, obviously I don't know everything that they do, but based on what I know, it's usually the post and hope. You post it out there and then you hope you get the applications out into your pool and you review through it. Or you post it and you're going to get a lot of resumes, but nobody is really qualified for it. We want to make sure we have more quality in our pool versus the quantity of the resumes that we get. That's basically, you know, why we I believe they do things a little bit differently, because the leaders and the hiring managers are vested in the resume review process or the interview process. A lot of organizations usually they just leave it to the recruiter or HR to bring in the people and say, okay, here's your top five. What do you like out of this top five? Or for us here at the Indians, if there are 400 resumes, the expectation of the philosophy is myself and the hiring managers will review through all 400 resumes to see, you know, what story they're trying to tell us on their resume.
That's so amazing to hear on all levels, because I know so many people in our audience are often career changers. There's somebody that started down one path and then said, you know what, I don't think this is doing it for me. And they're always coming to me saying, I don't have a sports experience. How do I get into this? And I say, leverage what you do have. You know, you have experience you've gained. You have things that you've done. You have a story to tell. Leverage that. And then I think it's also really important. The other thing people say all the time is, I feel like I apply and nobody's ever going to look at my resume and see it or hear from me. And what you're saying is, we go through them all. We see who's out there. And not only that, we look out other places. And it's interesting to hear how proactive of a vision you guys have.
We do. And you're absolutely right about that. And we hear that a lot. We get it a lot where people are like, well, I don't have a sports background or I don't have a sports management degree. Is that okay? I'm like, absolutely. What kind of experience do you have? We look at their strengths. We look at the products that they produce, the experience that they gained out of it, and then help them translate that into our world. For example, if someone who works in a consumer product goods for a majority of their life, they're like, well, what do I do in sports industry? A lot, because you manage a lot of different products and you manage the pricing, you manage the market demand, you look at the different segmentations. We do the same thing on the sports side. And when you kind of explain it that way, they're like, oh, well, I never thought about that. And I'm like, yeah, right. That's how we do it in our world. And so that's my job, to kind of paint that picture for them and give that visual. It's like, what you do can translate into our world. You just got to be open to it, if anything.
I guarantee everyone when they listen to this is going to be very excited about what you're saying, because I think there's so much there's so much self-doubt that comes into it. People think they don't fit, and yet they probably do. They just have to figure that out. And it's cool how you're taking a perspective on, you're almost like their Sherpa, you know, like guiding them through, like, actually, we can map your talents from that to this, and it works, you know?
Yes. And then that's why I enjoy what I do, because I'm able to kind of give them that opportunity. You know, sports industry is very competitive to get into. It is. And yeah, it's because of the number amount of teams that we have, the number amount of positions that we have. And that's understandable. And so for what I do, I understand that, because that's the reality of it. But if there's a way for me to help, you know, whether it's a student or a job applicant, to have an understanding, okay, these are some things maybe you're missing, or maybe these are some things come back to me about when you gain X experience, I'm more than willing to be able to do that.
That's really cool. Let's talk about the hiring process in a little more detail. You've been there for 8 years, and I always tell people that, you know, when I first started in the industry, social media wasn't really a thing. Analytics wasn't really a thing. Esports wasn't really a thing. What are some of the trends you're seeing over your 8 years? Are there certain areas of the business that are more active in hiring, or has it been pretty consistent over the last 8 years?
So I would say a lot of the trends has definitely been more on the analytics side, probably business analytics.
Right.
I think when the concept of Moneyball came out, everybody was very, very into it from a baseball perspective, but that's always been there. That's been there for a very long time, and it evolves year to year. But business analytics is definitely one of note, where it's coming more and more that I see other teams that are posting for, or strategy. And when I say strategy, you know, the strategy of looking at business, how do you make recommendation? How do you know it's the right approach? And then working and collaborating with different departments to be able to do it. Some people just use the keyword of strategy and they have no idea what goes behind it. But those type of positions are, I see coming up more and more within the industry. For us at the Indians, we've done this in the last 8 years since I've been here. That's one of the reasons why I actually was brought in, is because we wanted to bring in more analytics decision-making process into the fold. So we wanted to look for those who had that background to be able to help us, help guide us to those decisions, better business decisions, if you will, to help us, you know, get an understanding of what the economy is really like, what the fans really want, and how do we gauge and use those metrics to understand what the success are or what are the pain points are. So that's, I would say the analytics and strategy side is one of trend. Another one is probably more on the technology side of like software development, because software development is advantageous to any team that has it or has cracked some kind of code, right, to be able to use it, make it more efficient, whether it's the business side or baseball side. So that's another one that's a trend in the last couple of years that I saw.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's go through the process a little bit. You have a requisition open up. How do you narrow the field? You're going to get a lot of resumes. We know that. A lot of people are going to apply. Yeah. You've already said that you go through a lot of the resumes. What's your process? What are you looking for? And I know every job is different, but are there certain things you look for in a resume that stand out? Are there certain things that people do right or do wrong? How do you kind of, I mean, in your years of experience, how do you kind of turn this into advice to somebody out there and say, this is the right way to frame yourself?
Yeah, the first thing I would say, and this is a sort of a passion point for me, if you will, first thing is first, spell check. That is so important, and I don't think people realize like how important it is. So many times I get a resume, especially if it comes through a Microsoft Word doc, and you see the squiggly lines, and people ignore it.
Oh, gosh.
I don't understand that. But yet they'll put in one of their skill sets, pays attention to detail. Well, obviously you don't, because you still, you know, your spell check is incorrect. So spell checking, I would say that's my first advice to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Is take a look at your resume and look for spelling mistakes, because that speaks volume, believe it or not. Because if, how do I explain? So resumes are two-dimensional. It's the only thing I know of the person. That's my first impression of that person. If I don't have any kind of relationship, that's my first impression. You're selling yourself on a paper, and right off the bat, if I see a spelling mistake, you're not selling yourself very well. You're not taking quality in your work, and this is selling you. This is your work. So that tells me that they don't really care what they put through. They just want to try to slip through, and hopefully someone doesn't catch the mistake, or they just don't pay attention to detail. And that can be detrimental for the work that you do inside an organization.
Definitely.
Imagine if you put a tweet out there or something you put on a Facebook post and you misspelled a word. Imagine how many fans are going to come back at you and tell you, hey, do better at your job.
Right.
Not only is it representing you, you're representing the organization. You're an ambassador of the organization. So that's why spelling is key. Another thing on a resume that I look for is the story that they're trying to tell. What kind of experience are you trying to tell me? If you keep it pretty broad in the bullets, that probably doesn't tell me a lot of information, because you don't give me any of the quantity or the quantitative work, or, you know, how do you measure your success, or the things that you've done that would translate over to the job that you're applying for. So the roles that you put in your bullet has to be relevant to the role that you're applying for. And so often it doesn't. And it's okay sometimes, because if you don't have, like we were talking about before, if you're trying to transition from one type of career to another type of career, and sometimes not relevant, but then this is where your cover letter comes into play, where you tell that story there of why you're transitioning to a different type of career. You know, in terms of, I mean, I can go on and on about this, but
keep going. Don't slow down.
Yeah. In terms of how I narrow the field. So let's say if I have 400 resumes, as I spoke about before, it's myself and the hiring manager. We review through all 400 resumes. But the first and foremost, what's key and crucial is our recruitment meeting. So in this meeting, I sit down with the hiring manager and get an understanding, what are they looking for out of the person?
Right.
We know there's some technical pieces that they need to have. So those are the must-haves. But what are some other things that we need to look at in a person's experience that's going to help us if they're going to be great at the job, can do the job, and can do more out of the job? And so we have these conversations and be transparent and clear. And then we look at the intangibles too. What are some things that they have to have, whether it is you know, they've worked in some sort of team environment. We have to make an assumption they've worked in some sort of team environment. They know how to work within a team, or they know how to work individually, or they're very results oriented. And that's all dependent on what they tell us in the story of their resume. And so once we look through that, that's how we narrow down the field from 400 to possibly top 25.
Okay.
And that's how much we cut down. We look at it and we bring in, we look at top 25. From the top 25, for the Indian side, we actually will send out questionnaires. In the questionnaire, it's essay style. This is a way for us to get an understanding of their thought process, get an understanding of their written capabilities, and see how they organize their thoughts on paper. So this gives us an opportunity to learn a little bit more about them, not just from the resume, but now it's them actually sharing something that they know or something that they thought about with trends or where their opinions are. And so when we take that, we look at their questionnaire responses, then we'll cut it down to a phone interview set. We don't usually have a set number of phone interviews that we give. If we have, you know, 10 people who reply back with great questionnaires, and if we like all their questionnaires, we'll phone interview 10 people. It's not about the amount of people we phone interview. It's more about the quality of people that we phone interview. And then after that, we'll cut it down and bring in only maybe 3 to 4 at max individuals for in-person interviews. And the in-person interviews are all-day interviews. They will meet with a variety of different individuals in the organization because it's an organizational hire. This is not just a department hire. It's an organizational hire. So during that day, they could be meeting with somebody like a VP in our brand or our VP in our ballpark operations or somebody as a talent development coordinator. It could be anybody. And it's a way for us, again, understanding, you know, their perspective in a lot of different areas to provide that input for us to make that best decision possible for who's going to come in and work with us each day. So those are some things that we look through when we go through the hiring process. But it definitely does start with a resume. And the first thing for me, it's always going to be the spelling. And then what's the story they're trying to tell us?
I love that you have a written component to it. Like, I have seriously done these interviews for years, and I've never heard of an organization actually having the questionnaire or essay style response. And I think that's so smart to see how somebody can formulate their thoughts and articulate themselves, because that says a lot about their ability on multiple levels. And I commend you for that. I think that's really cool and an interesting thing to know. Let's talk about the phone interview process a little bit. Obviously, almost everybody out there listening has gone through a phone interview at some point, and it causes a lot of anxiety for people. They always have lots of questions. Any advice, any advice you have on that process? I'm like, I imagine you get off the phone with somebody or you've talked to somebody, and sometimes you know right away, like, that's not the right person. And other times you're like, ooh, I like, that was good. What is it that makes somebody sound good? How do you know that that person has that it factor or whatever it may be?
Yeah, that's real. You're absolutely right about phone interviews are a lot harder than people expect.
Yeah.
Because during a phone interview, you can't see the gestures. You can't see the facial expression. And all you can see, listen to is the tone of voice and how they're communicating. Those who I find very impressive are those who are very articulate in their responses. They are able to provide examples to answers to the questions that I have. So I know those are going to be quality conversations. And that's another key, what I was going to say, conversation. If the phone interview is conversational, you know it's a good interview. If the phone interview is more of question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, and you feel it that way, probably it's not going to be the greatest phone interview because we just feel like we're just pulling out too much information. Yep. For me as an interviewer, when I feel like I have to pull out more answers because I'm not getting them, and that's why it's a question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. On my side, when I'm evaluating, I'm like, man, it takes a while to just kind of get the answer out of this person, and they're not understanding the question at all. And if the person doesn't understand the question, I appreciate it more when they come back to me. It's like, you know, can you please clarify? I'm not really understanding the question. Would you be able to rephrase it? Or is this what you're looking for? This is what I heard. I appreciate that more. That means they're listening, and they're trying to find out what exactly am I trying to get to. That's conversational.
Right.
Another thing is, you know, this may sound silly, but it's trivial, but it happens a lot more than people expect. Put yourself in an environment that you're actually having a professional conversation for a phone interview. I've had phone interviews where people are sitting outside and I'm hearing dogs bark or someone that's chewing on their gum or chewing on a pen cap, or they're typing while I'm talking to them. You hear all of this on this side. And so then my assumption is, are you not that interested?
Right.
Am I boring you? Or, you know, you just don't care about how you do in this phone interview process because maybe you're just thinking you're talking to HR. That's not the case.
Right.
You are, you may or may not be talking to HR, but I can guarantee you for the Indian side, when you're having a phone interview with me, it's not just me. The hiring manager is most likely going to be in the room with me and they're just listening. And so those are things you can't make assumption. You're just talking to one person. You're probably talking to a few people and you just don't know it because people want to see how you react to different individuals. And the answers that you give, again, it goes back to providing examples within your answers. If you don't have an immediate answer, we're not expecting you to answer right away. Take a step back. Just say, you know, that's a really great question. Can I have a minute to kind of think of my response? The interviewers are not going to tell you no. If they tell you no, then maybe you need to think about their culture a little bit.
Right, exactly.
But they're going to give you that opportunity to really take a pause and collect your thoughts. Pause in your answers. You don't always have to come back with response immediately. If you know it, great. If you don't know it, take a step back. It's okay to take a breather and then continue on with the phone interview. You rather have a quality answer than just speeding through it because you want to get it done. The other one is probably long-winded answers. This is true. I ask one question of, tell me a little bit about yourself. 30 minutes later, the person finally finished.
Oh,
and
no.
I timed it. It was 30 minutes.
That's terrible.
And it was just one question.
Oh, that's
After
brutal.
That, I knew so much more about the person. I didn't have anything else to ask them because it was just a simple, tell me a little bit about yourself. And
yeah.
They took that long. If you catch yourself being long-winded because you're nervous, again, take a breather.
Yeah.
Think through what that question they're asking, round it out and end it, and then move on to the next question. That's the only, you know, and the other thing is like maybe practice to yourself.
Yeah.
Sit in front of a mirror. If it's silly to you to even think about sitting in front of the mirror, think about what it's going to be like when someone's actually firing the questions at you and you're not prepared. You'd rather prepare than not prepare.
So when I tell people this a lot, that when you guys obviously have an extensive process to vet the resumes that come in, do the questionnaire, do the phone interview. I tell people when they get there and they're face to face with somebody, they already know that you have the skill set. Yeah, of course, they're going to ask you questions about the job, but they already know you have the skill set. A lot of what they're trying to figure out is how great of a cultural fit you will be and your soft skills and your charisma and your ability to fit in and lead and all those sort of things. Is that accurate? Do you find that to be true too? That once you bring that last three people in, a lot of what you're judging on is how they can handle themselves in the room?
Absolutely. That is absolutely correct. By the time you get to the in-person interview and all the information that we've already collected, the not only through your questionnaire and your phone interview process, it's the behavior that's going to get you the job. When you walk through the door, how are you going to interact with the individuals that you meet? How are you going to build the connection and relationship as you're having these conversations with them? Yes, they're going to ask you a little bit more about your experience. You got to get a deeper dive, but really it does come down to the behavior. Your behavior is what's going to get you the job at the end of the day. Every organization has a culture. They want to make sure that they're bringing in the right person within that culture. And so that's what they're trying to figure out. And for us, that's why we have an all-day interviewing process. We want to make sure that this person, you know, is the right fit for all of us. Because we're such a collaborative organization, it'd be detrimental if we bring in the wrong person who doesn't know how to work with certain individuals or certain personality types. We want to make sure that we figure that out during that in-person interview.
So let's imagine somebody is applying for one of your jobs and they get through that first phase. They get the questionnaire, they answer the questionnaire, they send it in. And then they're wondering, should I follow up? What should I do if they haven't heard anything for a little bit? This is one of the big questions is, should I follow up? Like, should I reach back out and say, hey, you know, I just wanted to check in. So what's your take on that? What's your take on follow up of somebody after they've done some step in the process, whether it's a phone interview or the questionnaire? Should they sit and wait and just wait for the things to come to them? Or does it matter to be more persistent or, you know, following up with you more directly? What's your take on that?
They should follow up. You should definitely follow up. I would not sit back because if you sit back, it kind of shows us maybe you're not really interested or maybe you've forgotten about it or maybe you already found another offer. We don't know. So we have to make those assumptions. So if we don't hear back from you, most likely we just figured, okay, maybe they're not interested anymore. If you follow up, what I usually do is if I get an email of a follow-up, I usually send it to the hiring manager so they know, hey, this person follow up. We keep it in the back of our mind because it shows that they're interested and they really are wanting to know where the status is. if I have the answer to it, most likely I'm going to send back a response and say, hey, this is where we're at. But if I don't have a response to it, I still send back a response and say, you know, I don't have any updates for you at this moment, but when we do, I'll let you know. And then it's up to you at that point is like how much more you're going to follow up. Being persistent, there's a difference to that. If you're persistent, like every other day, you're sending me an email, you're kind of annoying about
it because
my
annoying.
Email inbox is already like filled with everybody already.
Right.
I'm going to keep that in the back of my mind. So it's like,
you go into a different
really,
category.
Really, really aggressive. Like, they really, really want to be here. Like, what's going on? You know, and it makes me question, like, well, why? Why do you want to be here? Why are you such a, you know, you're trying to be on top of everything, which is great. But if you're doing it every other day, that's a little bit excessive.
Right.
So,
yeah, totally.
You want to make sure you do it in a right, timely manner. I would say once you send in the questionnaire, if you haven't heard anything back, within a week, send an email and say, I just want to follow up. Did you get my questionnaire? Did you get my responses? Make sure you get confirmation out of that and express, you know, reiterate your interest. You know, I am still very interested in this role. And then it lets me know, okay, great. This person, at least they've had some sort of touch point and I'm able to respond back to them and let them know. And then that way we can keep that relationship going. If you've done a phone interview and you still haven't heard any kind of response back, same thing. I would give it about a week before you follow up.
Okay. That's good. That's really good. Because I say sometimes 3 to 5 days. I think it's good to hear you're looking at a week, and I think that's smart. It's that gray area, but just doing it is important, and doing it within a week makes a lot of sense.
Yes, doing it is important, yes.
Right. So many teams have an entry-level program to hire new staff and train them in their ways and their culture, and the Indians are no exception. You have a 10-month rotational business development program. Can you tell us a little bit more about that program? Because it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. So the business development program is something that we created about, I want to say, 6 years ago. We recognize in the industry, as I mentioned before, it's very competitive to get into the sports industry from a full-time perspective. But we always want to be able to build talent, kind of like creating our own minor league system pipeline, if you will, from a business operations standpoint. So we got together with a variety of different individuals in the organization, especially from our revenue departments, and say, okay, what do we do that we could build a really great talent and then be able to mold them to do it the Indians way? A lot of things we do, we call it the Indians way. And so when we took a look at what we could potentially do, looking at schools, semesters, whether it's on quarters, what are some things that we can maximize the effort and give hands-on experience for the students or entry-levels to kind of come in? And so we created this business development program. The business development program, as you mentioned, it is a rotation. The rotation starts them off in our fan services area where they learn customer service skills. It's easy to say, well, I've learned customer service skills when I'm a waiter or I worked at X retail place. Those are skills, but this is at a different level, you know, from problem solving, the different fans that come across it. How do we do it the Indians way, and what's the communication that we give back to the fans to make sure that we're considerate, we're empathetic to what they're trying to tell us, even if we can't change a policy, how are we going to be able to kind of work through it? So the rotation, that's why the rotation starts there. They need to understand from the ground up the types of questions that come across our plate, the things that we're trying to solve from a higher business level standpoint to make the fan experience better. Once they go through that rotation within those couple of months, they will then learn to run by our season and group sales. This is where our revenue comes in. How do we deal with a different type of audience and different types of issues, different ways of how to resolve things, and how do we bring in the sales in the economy and market that we're in? And so they learn business as a whole, how do sales run from a season tickets and group sales standpoint. As they go through that, then they will move to our corporate partnership and premium hospitality. Corporate partnership is where you're really doing a lot of the marketing, getting understanding the negotiation skills, getting understanding, again, a different type of audience when you're talking to C-level suites. They go through that and they look at business plans, they look at marketing campaigns, they look at, you know, what are some businesses that we need to market to and why, and what's that revenue expectation they come back if we were to do this contract, that contract. And so as they're going through each of these rotations, they're actually learning about the analytics that go behind it as well. And so they'll take a look at the reports, the research, the trends, and get an understanding why we do the things that we do, how do we make recommendations, or how can we do things a little bit better. And they also learn about event management. You know, when we put together events, who do you need to get involved with those events, what things do you need to consider, and why. And so that's why we do the rotational program, because you get a holistic view of what it means from revenue stream, how that all works out. And we want to do it within 10 months, because that's a good way for you to understand is for a full season from start to finish of business, how it really is supposed to run.
That's really cool. I imagine these roles are really competitive. What are you kind of looking for when you're filling those roles? Are you looking for a specific, I mean, I know you mentioned earlier that you look outside of just sports management majors and sports experience, but do you get, do you have any kind of a pattern that you're looking for when you fill these kind of roles?
Yeah, so the first and foremost is we look at what they've done in school. So how much involvement have you had with other school activities, whether it's groupings, sororities, fraternities, what kind of involvement, what kind of role did you play? We also look at student athletes, because they work really well when they're looking at diverse group of teammates, how do they interact and getting understanding of different products and knowledges in a fairly quickly manner. I mean, we do train everybody, and that's the first and foremost for us. We want to make sure that we provide them the development opportunities for that. But we're looking at what kind of mind frame have they been in school settings. And then the other thing we look at is their academics. While they're in school, how well did they do not only managing their full, you know, full-time classwork, but then also having a job or being a student athlete or, you know, volunteering, things that they've done outside academically as well. And so we're looking at a variety of different things. You know, I wouldn't say there's one template that fits all, but more importantly is for us is like, have they been able to work in some sort of team environment? Do they have an understanding of what it's like to take on a leadership role? And do they have an understanding of how business runs, or have an understanding of what they want to do in the end? So those are some things that we look at.
What percentage of these employees, obviously just a rough estimate, but do a lot of these employees go on to full-time jobs with the organization, or do you guys help them move on to other organizations? Like how does the transition after that 10-month period is up?
Yeah, so that's another great question. So we have turned a few from our business development programs into full-time roles. It's really hard for me to kind of get a percentage because it varies class to class.
Right.
It's really dependent if we have the availability because of our business, but we have. Most of the time, that every time we had, we call it for short BDPs, but whenever we have BDPs, we turn some into full-time roles. If not, what we do is we help them try to get into other roles, maybe within another industry or another club or another sports league. And so we help them out as far as like looking at their resumes, reviewing their resumes, see what they put on their resumes and help tweak it and help build those connections and networks for them.
That's great. So we'll finish up with this because you've given us tons of time. And I really appreciate all the advice you're giving. I mean, this is going to, I'm telling you, they're going to eat this up with fork and spoon. For entry-level job seekers or people in college who will soon be seeking entry-level jobs, what advice would you give them to make themselves the most desirable to sports teams once they graduate? I still think that's one of the big barriers they all have. Yes, a lot of them are doing great in school, and they're doing clubs, and they're volunteering, and they're doing internships. Is there anything that stands out to you, like that they could be doing just to put themselves that little extra 1% ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. Building relationships.
Great.
That's important, especially if you don't know anybody. Get on LinkedIn. Most of us are on LinkedIn.
Hallelujah.
Get on LinkedIn. Do your research. Find out who's where, why they're there, whatever it may be, and ask for informational interviews. Informational interviews are interviews where, for me, I schedule them, and it's a way to me to get to know that person. It's a way for me to build a relationship with that person. They're just thinking, I'm just trying to get information from my Lynn to understand how do I get into the Indians. Whereas for me, it is my way to say, am I going to use this person later on or not?
Right.
I might have to recruit them later. And I'm building a relationship already and having it in my bank and my pool. So getting on LinkedIn, do your research, find these people, building those connections, connect with them. Go to events that you know there's going to be other sports people or business people and finding a connection somewhere. Because you never know who's going to be your agent within that organization to bring you in front of the right people. You never know how these connections are going to help you. But just those are the opportunities for you to rise to the top of the stack, because people who have already built connections with, or people who I know I'm getting referrals from my teammates from, I'm going to call them up and get their story and find out what exactly is their experience. And you just never know, from that phone call in itself just moves you straight up and then you got a full-time role. You just never know. So it's just building those relationships.
Maylin, I tell you, after talking to you, I think I want to work for the Indians too. This has been great. I really appreciate it. Understanding more of the process that you go through and finding the right talent, right? Finding that those best people out there, no matter who they are, that process and that level of detail you guys go through is really impressive. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us more about it.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Thank you so much to Maylin. I listened back to that episode again, and there's just so much I get out of it. There's so much little nuggets and little pieces of information that can just make a huge difference for you as you move forward into the next year. All those little things you might be thinking you want to try or do, and she's like, "No, try this. No, do it this way." And she's sharing you exactly what's expected out there in the marketplace. Such a powerful episode. I'm so thankful for her coming on the show and sharing so much with all of you. Thank you. I'm thankful for all of you too for listening. It's so important to me to watch our audience grow. And, you know, all of you who have given us positive reviews and have shared it and have talked to your professors about it, or have talked to your other friends who want to work in the sports industry, I'm extremely thankful for you and for the many great fans of our show who are part of our Work in Sports podcast group on Facebook, and have shared their guest ideas, or maybe have connected me with somebody. I'm super thankful for all of you. So just thanks. Just thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I couldn't be more appreciative of all of you. Thanks for listening. And I will see you all next week. Get back to work.